Welcome everyone to another episode of the Premier Football Podcast. This is our 15th episode and we've got a special episode for you today, bearing in mind that the Singapore Premier League season is starting this weekend on the 13th. We have Jerome with us from the Singapore Football Podcast. Is that right, Jerome?
Yep.
Did I get the name right?
Yep. Yep, SG Football Podcast on Instagram and on Instagram and YouTube, but Facebook, I'm not too sure why we haven't been able to change the name, but it's still stuck as the unofficial SG Podcast so far.
And we have the usual gang with us. Hi, Kel.
Hey, Irul. How you guys doing?
Good. And Hata. Hey, Hata.
Hey, everyone. Hello.
And lastly, we've got Ewan. Hey, Ewan.
Hey, everybody.
So let's get right into it with my question for Jerome. So Jerome, with the season kicking off this weekend, what is the sentiment from the fans? You know, how do they view this season for the Singapore Premier League, bearing in mind that we're still in a pandemic? You know, there's still no attendance in stadiums. But on the flip side, all eight teams are locally based, probably for the first time in quite a long while. So what's the view from the fans?
I think right now it's generally wanting to catch local football again. I think some of the fans are actually really looking forward to that. We were kind of hoping that fans would be allowed back into the stadium, especially after last season's, testing, and at the last Tampines game that they had, they were hoping that pilot program that they were having for the PCR testing and everything else, they were hoping to watch the games in the stadiums itself. But I mean, looking at where we currently are, that's not going to happen. But I think fans are generally looking forward just to see their teams back in action. And no doubt, even though it's behind closed doors, they will definitely be there. Some of the fans will be watching outside the gates, outside the fences. You definitely won't stop these guys from going for the game. So they're generally looking forward to the start of the season.
But do you think, security or policing would be tighter with, you know, COVID measures in place this time around?
Based on what we saw last year, I mean, when I went down to the games, because we, shameless plug, we did a behind closed doors kind of documentary for the fans who were outside the stadiums and stuff like that. And there was barely any policing or nothing at all that was going on outside. So we were just interviewing fans and stuff like that. Everybody, of course, was wearing masks, and the fans were adhering to somewhat adhering to distancing measures and stuff like that. So I don't think they really care, though. I think they're just going to be down at the stadiums supporting their clubs.
And I think a couple of stadiums are closed this season. Is that right? I think Bishan is closed and Queenstown as well.
Yeah, Queenstown hasn't been open for a while. So the clubs, some of them will actually be back at their original stadiums. So Balestier will be back at Toa Payoh Stadium. And then Hougang will be back at Hougang Stadium. So the ground sharing will still happen between some of the teams. But like what you mentioned, Bishan Stadium will not be used this year. So that's one of it. So it will still maintain the ground sharing. But some of the other teams will actually be back in their home stadiums, like Hougang and Balestier Khalsa.
Now, here's my question to the rest of you guys. I mean, for me, I used to be a Home United supporter. Unfortunately, it's a bit hard for me to find any sense of belonging to the new Lion City Sailors because it just doesn't feel the same. Admittedly, my affection for Home United was because of, I used to be in the home team. Yeah, and so I guess it's sort of like an easy translation there. Yeah, there's just no affection for Lion City Sailors now because, you know, there's no connection to what it used to be. So to you guys, is there any particular team that you're going to be following this season? And if so, tell us why.
I mean, I've said this in abundance, but originally when the S League first started, where I lived, Bedok was the club for me. And then honestly, I'll admit, I just kind of waved off because of lack of TV coverage or lack of whatever it was. I just kind of waved off. And now staying in the far east of Singapore, technically I'm supposed to support either Hougang or Tampines, where I feel a connection to. Inverted commas are close open, but my team is going to be Tanjung Pagar. Like I said, the the true underdogs of club football, where they have no wins last season. Been following them on Instagram every single day. Their training sessions look good. Players look fit and ready and raring to go. So I'm going to support the underdog team, man. You know, Tanjung Pagar, why not, right? One of the OGs of the Singapore League. So they're my team. I'm going to go 100% behind. So look out for that.
Jerome, I have a question for you around Tanjung Pagar. I've been you know, looking them up, and you know I was listening to that Faris Hamid podcast that you did, which was very enlightening, and I absolutely loved it. And he talked about the challenges that they had last season, where they weren't able to bring in the right players due to time constraints, right? I can see that they're also struggling a little bit this season, but they have brought in some older veterans, right? I see Ridwan, I see Karol Amri, a player I really liked, by the way. Farid, he's staying on, and you know, there's also Emrik Ong, whom I know from my time at Boot Hype, right? So they have polished up and they've sprinkled a bit more experience around the team. Where do you see them going this season now that they've been able to? I mean, they have small budgets, yes, but they have been able to reinforce with some wily old veterans.
I definitely see them getting a win this season. Sorry, but I didn't mean to start with that one. But I definitely foresee them getting one win this season. But looking at the team, really, they have made some very astute signings through the transfers. Blake Ricciuto is a big name that's coming in. Especially, he is the one that I'm really looking forward to, because he, for DPMM, he was really that rock in the center midfield, you know, who's able to bomb forward, able to track back, able to defend. So I think he is definitely going to add more steel into that defense, into that midfield. Plus, with Karol Amri, Ryo Nishiguchi as well, who was fantastic for Alvarex last season. I mean, him and Tomoyuki Doi together, you know, there were times where Ryo actually confused me, because Ryo is actually a pretty big player, but he would play on the wings, and he was pretty quick for his size. And, you know, he would switch alongside with Doi quite a lot of time, where Doi will sometimes move over a little bit more to the left, and then Ryo will go into the center. So I'm definitely another player that I'm really happy to see still playing in the Singapore League and playing in a local team. Plus with Karol Amri, Sharin Sabrin as well, to strengthen the centre-back positions. And of course, one of our favourites, Emrik Ong. He's definitely one of my favourite players, because he's one of the most down-to-earth guys that you'll ever meet in the local football scene, and someone that I really really like backing, because he's one of the nice guys of local football for me. So I think they will actually be there or thereabouts, mid-table, around the centre of the league, fighting it out. I don't see them really having the season that they had last year, because they were quite haphazardly put together. I think now they've had a year to really get everything back on track for them. And plus with the new players, like you said, the wily old veterans, plus, you know, Blake Ricciuto to add more steel into the midfield, is definitely going to be fantastic for them this year.
Yeah, and I strongly disagree. I think they'll be champions. With me supporting them and backing them, Tanjung Pagar all the way, we're going to be champions. Just wait and watch. Wait and watch. Laugh. Everybody laughs at me, but wait and watch.
But definitely, I definitely foresee them winning a number of games this year. I think really with the number of signings that they've made, you know, hopefully they will gel together. Plus their backroom staff with Noah Alam Shah, really strength. I'm really looking forward to seeing that happen for them.
So I think Hyrule mentioned previously about Lion City Sailors, right, and how they've changed so much in the last year or so after their takeover. And they've got, you know, I think out of all the teams, they've heavily invested in the team with all these Brazilians that they talk about. They managed to retain their talents. Big marketing push, right, with their jerseys and all that. So do you think they can push Alvarex off the top spot? Or do you think it's time for, you know, for the team to gel, and it could be a transition season, or are they going straight to the top?
I think nothing less than top position will satisfy them this year. With the amount of investment that's been made in their team throughout the last two windows itself, honestly, no less than first will do, because with the arrivals of Diego Lopez, Jorge Felipe, Faris Ramli, Amrul Adli, so many decent players back into their having arrived, you know, that's the thing. And their squad already is strong enough. So you think about it this way. You look at their attacking lineup right now. You have Faris Ramli, you have Adam Suwandi, Gabriel Kwek, Stipe Plazibat. They got so much attacking talent in that squad. And I didn't even mention Diego Lopez as well, who plays in attacking midfield. So, and plus there's Song Wei-Yong, so many players. I can go on and on with the amount of players that they have who have proven themselves in the Singapore Premier League or the S League beforehand, that honestly, first place will not, or anything other than first place will not do for them this year, honestly.
Yeah, hey Jerome, it's Ewan here. Yep. I'm actually quite interested to see also how Lion City Sailors end up doing. Mm-hmm. I was actually very curious about the structure of how they are set up, right? Mm-hmm. They're the first privatized team here in Singapore. So what makes them different? Do they what makes them different? Sorry, do they have, you know, very large backers and that's just it, or are they structured differently and hence? Can somehow, you know, maybe in a good way, provide a blueprint for success for future clubs down the road?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, they are setting a little bit of a benchmark for teams to actually go private, like privatization, because, you know, not only are they setting up on their player side, but I believe there have been some signings in the back room as well that have been brought in, that have been changing the structure of the club a little bit here and there. So plus they have a great coach in Aurelio Vidmar who has been in the top AFC competitions before to really push them forward. I think there's something there. I think right now I am still working out the back room a little bit. I'm still, like, you know, trying to dissect my way through everything and look at it from the bigger picture. But I believe there is something being built up there, and it's something that I believe Forest Lee will definitely push forward within this season. And I think he will, and I think it's a good thing for clubs to really actually look at this example of Lion City Sailors right now and really use that as a benchmark for them to follow. Because, I mean, yes, they do have big backing, but at least with that big backing, you can see that there are things being done in the background that are, you know, clearly being worked for them, like marketing-wise and stuff like that, like how a club should be brought forward. The marketing-wise for LCS, I believe, has been really good. So hopefully, you know, this will push other teams to actually push their social media forward. Like, I mean, with Tanjung Pagar, I mean, one example is that their social media this close season has actually been fantastic. Last season, we didn't see anything during the season itself. I don't mean to bash, but it was poor. But, you know, coming into the new season, they have been really pushing, you know, now with the new players in there, you know, the fans are getting excited. The Jaguar Force, who I spoke to, have been really impressed with what they've been doing on the social media side and how they've been managing to push the message of the club forward. And I think it's definitely working for them.
Could it be, though? I know, okay, so it's a bit of a catch-22, right? Because they're such a big team, expected to do so well. Then you have the likes of Tanjung Pagar, who didn't win anything last season. So everybody's going to be backing the underdogs against them. So that would be great if you know, these teams start chipping away at this supposed big dog, right? But what happens then if the opposite takes place and they just blow everyone away? Would that, you know, it might end up being unfun for the fans? Or, you know, is there some point where there is a balance and it's, you know, not exactly it's not really a situation where you're caught between a rock and a hard place.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, that's a really big catch-22 right there, because we want to see an exciting league as much as possible, but with Lion City buying all the players that they have, but I mean, they will be participating in AFC Cup competitions, and the goal for them, of course, is to enter the AFC Champions League. So I think for now, it really depends on how this season pans out. I think they will blow the competition away, but it depends on how the teams that are below them or in and around them will start to build up and look at them as an example to follow. I think we got to be honest with ourselves. We're definitely going to see them. If everything goes well for them, they're going to be running away with the competition. So I think it's down now to the other teams to actually see where to really strengthen. Because I mean, other teams, you look at them, they've actually strengthened in players already. You know, quite a number of the teams have actually bought decent players that will definitely improve the squad. You look at Geylang, they have bought in a couple of international players. One of them, especially my one of the top scorers from Bali United previously, Sylvain Convelius. Sorry if I'm butchering that name, but you know, he is another one of those players that is coming out who will hopefully make a big impact, because he is a major player who was a major player at Bali United previously. So I think it's all small steps right now. I think for Lion City, because of the backing, the massive backing that they have, will definitely be pushing away further. But I think it's a good example for the rest of the clubs to follow. And looking at some of the signings that the other clubs have made, definitely there are steps being taken to push forward. Now it's just whether they are able to find more backing to push themselves even further forward. I think that's the major thing now.
Yeah, and I just feel all the spotlight on the Lion City Sailors, everyone's kind of, in a way, forgetting about, you know, the team that went above them last season, Tampines Rovers.
Mm.
You know, they've got a strong support, a stronger squad as well. Do you finally see them being up there again, or this year, winning something, or getting a title, at least winning the league? Or do you think it's still going to be Albrecht Nagata?
This year is going to be a struggle, because looking at the team, sorry, I actually have the team sheets out with me now. So like, sure. I mean, looking at the team, they've lost quite a number of players, and really honestly, especially last year, the biggest worry that I had for them was their defense. And they have, you know, they have lost players, you know, in that center back position. So, I mean, if you look at Tampines Rovers itself, I mean, right now, their centre backs that they have are Bayhaki Kaizan, Irfan Najib, who is a young centre back, and Daniel Bennett. Those are the only three centre backs that they currently have at this present moment. So they are desperately lacking a lot of cover, and plus they'll be playing in the AFC Champions League this year. So, and in the toughest group as well, might I add. But you know, they haven't really added to their club. In all honesty, I mean, they did add Armin Bosniak, you know, Amirul Haikal, Mark Ryan, who I'm looking forward to see playing in Tampines, you know, taking after his father, taking his father's number 14. But really, besides that, you know, they've lost Jordan Webb, they've lost Amirul Adli, Huzaifa they've let go. So they really have not replaced some of these players, you know, and they look really short at the back, especially. And that was my biggest worry for them last year.
Speaking about playing in the regional in the regional competitions, as you can see, yes, I think Tampines would struggle, especially in the higher tier Champions League. I've seen Gamba Osaka play live, and they're no joke, they're really, really, really fast.
Yeah.
What about the other two, Geylang and Lion City Sailors? Do you think they'll get past the group stages and do us proud in the latter stages?
Lion City Sailors, the one that I'm looking forward to is them playing against Kedah, because it'll be the return of Idol Sharin and Anumantan Kuma, as those two, basically. Idol Sharin and Anumantan Kuma are returning to Singapore to play against Lion City Sailors. I think that's going to be an intense matchup. And, you know, Aurelio Vidma against Idol Sharin, that would be a fantastic matchup in terms of coaching minds. By me having spoken about this earlier to some friends of mine, we believe that, you know, we think that Lion City Sailors will have too much for Kedah at the end of the day. And looking at Geylang-wise, I think they'll do okay. They won't do massively well, but this is their first time back into AFC competition in more than a decade. So it'll be good to see them play, and I'll be looking forward to that, really. The Geylang Ultras will be looking forward to watching them play in that competition. But in terms of players that they brought in that player who I was talking about, Silvano Convalius. They brought in Mateus Moreshe, sorry if I'm butchering that name as well, but you know, they brought in two very big name players, you know, both, you know, especially for Mateus, who was playing in Vasco da Gama. So that's going to be really big for them. But honestly, I hope they do well, and I think they'll do okay, but not too much to go through maybe to the next round. Maybe they'll definitely get a couple wins here and there, but not too sure whether they'll be able to make it over to the next round of the cup.
Let's hope Geylang boleh then.
Yes, I am hoping Geylang boleh, really. I have a soft spot for Geylang because honestly, they were the first team that brought me back to the Singapore Premier League in 2016, so 2015 around that time. So I really have a soft spot for them in terms of you know, their fans especially. I love speaking to the Geylang Ultras. You know, they are such a big presence in the Singapore fan spectrum. You know, there's them, there is the Hougang Cools and the Jaguar Force from Tanjung Pagar. So for their sake, for the fans' sake, I hope they do well. I really do.
So Jerome, now that you've mentioned about the EFC Cup, and we all know that Singapore is hosting a couple of groups from the EFC group stages. That's for the groups that involve both the Lion City Sailors and Geylang. I know it's quite some time, or rather quite a while away, end of June, and I'm sure we're all hoping that, you know, we get to be able to be in stadiums by then and at least watch the games. Do you think fans of the other clubs will rally behind Geylang and Lion City Sailors during these matches, you know, sort of like a Singapore against the rest kind of feeling?
I feel that should be the way of it all, because right now, that's what our local football needs at the moment. It needs support from everybody around. Like what some people mentioned to me is that we do quite a bit for local football, but we can do more. And more would mean to support each other when it comes to these kind of regional competitions. Because honestly, if we don't support, if only the fans of the various teams support, then, or if only the various teams of the fans support and nobody else supports, then, I mean, it's kind of a wasted thing, lah. You know, I would rather have, you know, fans of all the teams, you know, come together and support their fellow countrymen when it comes to these kind of regional competitions. I mean, that's the way I feel about that whole situation. I mean, for me, as a pretty much a neutral fan, I would go for any game basically. But, you know, to see the rest of the fans out there, you know, as one nation supporting the club at that point in time, you know, especially there was one game, the Home United Zonal Final, when they played against Sirius Negros. I think it was in 2018 or 2019. I forgot what year that was. It was like on National Day. So you let, I remember walking around the stadium. I didn't just see Home United fans. I saw, you know, fans from different clubs actually coming down and actually watching the game, because it was, and what's more, it was on National Day. So it was quite beautiful that, you know, they won the game at the end, and then the song Home started playing on the speakers outside, you know, during the trophy presentation itself. So I thought that was a beautiful moment. And I think these moments will make, I remember writing this as my headline for the article was nights like these to make a nation dream again, you know, kind of thing. I know it sounds very cheesy, but still, those kind of moments really made me feel very happy to be a Singaporean and actually watch our fellow countrymen play and actually take back a trophy in terms of regional competition. I thought that was really cool. So I really hope to see, you know, fans of not only not only fans from Lion City Sailors or fans from Geylang to come down. You know, expect to see, you know, the Tampines boys, Tanjung Pagar, everybody all coming down and rallying behind the team as one.
I guess one can only hope that, you know, the matches for, at the very least, the local teams will be held at the Sports Hub, but I don't think that's going to be happening.
Yeah, I think it'll be either Jalan Besar, or I think it'll all be at Jalan Besar or Tampines Hub if it's for Geylang. But Jalan Besar was fantastic that night, I thought, really.
Speaking of hopes and dreams, Hatta, you came up with a very good article on what hopefully we can see in the future for local football.
Yeah, I didn't come up with it. I found an article on today.com. I'm not going to take credit for that article, but it was. I think just to summarize it, it was a statement by our government and our ministers about the future of Singapore football. They didn't mention, you know, Singapore Premier League, like what we were talking about, but they mentioned Goal 2034, and we've kind of been here before, right? Goal 2010. Being Singapore being in the World Cup after they were inspired by France importing second, third generation Arab and African-based players. And Goal 2034 is our second push into the World Cup. You know, I'm usually quite apprehensive, and we've all kind of been here with the government saying, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, big plans, big strategic plans, and then it doesn't follow through. As part of this plan, I feel quite enthused on what I see on paper. So just to summarize, I think they want to improve and standardize the footballing curriculum across the entire island. So, you know, the shades of Spain and Germany and their, you know, island and their countrywide philosophy. They want to improve coaching standards. So all, even primary and secondary school coaches will have to get an AFC C level license. There's going to be an elite youth league, local scholarships, and maybe, you know, tying up with La Liga and Bundesliga and lots of European clubs, sending people there. And then also helping them through their careers, not just scholarships at a young age, but then once you go through NS as well, finding a way to kind of balance out training and the professional development while doing the national service. This is clearly a look into the future, next generation, right? Not so much the current generation that's playing now.
Yeah.
Jerome or anyone, what do you think of this? Do you think this is a good plan that could push us to the next level, to the World Cup? I'm not expecting much. I want us to be best in the region first, because we're not even best in Southeast Asia yet, right?
Yeah.
And you know, and do you think this is a good plan? Kyle, you
no, I mean, no, to me, like, you know, we've got plans before Goal 2010 kind of blew up in our face. Not kind of, it did blow up in our face. To me, it's, you know, it's not about the population of Singapore. Uruguay has gone to the World Cup. Croatia has been to the finals. It's not about army or national service. South Korea's got a structure. Israel's got a structure. They're still fighting in there. And to me, I think, end of the day, it boils down to two things. One is, who is driving this? Like, who is really putting the heart and soul behind it to drive this initiative across Singapore? But I think, primarily, we got to go back and invest back in the league. To me, it's all, I've been hammering this for some time, a year to 2 years already, that there has to be more clubs in the league where you get young talent in, put them in. Yeah, they may not be the best, but you get them playing football against, you know, a bit more competition, get them playing regularly, weekly. That's the only way you get better, you know. And if you want to build, if you look at Spain, you want to look at Portugal and all these countries, they have a good league. They have league, they've brought out really good established players that, you know, develop in the future. And we should look at the same, like having 8 teams is really fun. It's really fine. That's cool. But let's think of a way where we can put money back into the S League and grow that league and get attention from Singaporeans into the league, because it's a catch 22. The main end of the day, the main problem will be Singaporeans. If you don't have people supporting it, driving it, pushing their kids to, you know, travel, try your career or a start in football, it's going to be, you know, no one's going to buy it. You can have the best product, but if no one is buying it, it's a dead product. So to me, that's the problem. I feel they really have to go back to the league, get Singaporeans invested in the league, interested in the league, put it on the media, put it on social media, put it on TV, snippets, highlights. Just keep doing things like that. To me, that's where I think they didn't address it, and that's really concerning.
Yep. I think Kel hit the nail on the head right there. I think it's all about a mentality shift in Singaporeans in terms of football development, in especially from the youth onwards. Because, you know, when you're younger, I mean, when some of us are younger, probably like some of us had like images of us playing football, but then like our parents were like telling us, nah, like why would you want to do this kind of thing when there's no future ahead of it? Because they've seen what's been going on. You know, they've seen what can happen with, you know, these kind of things. I mean, we do have exceptions in the case with the Fundy brothers and some players have gone overseas. But, you know, in general, the mentality from when we were young was that, you know, football in Singapore is not a career that you want to go down. And I think, you know, that's the thing. We've scored a lot of own goals out when it comes to this, when it comes to these kinds of goals that we've set for ourselves, whether it's goal 2010 or the one that's coming up. We've scored multiple own goals already, unfortunately. And yes, we need a driving force behind all this. And it's all well and good if we have all the talk of, like, you know, us wanting to create this on the styling of this and that. But if the driving force is just going to say that, and then after that, there's nothing being made, then what's the point? I think we're all disillusioned at how everything has turned out from all these talk that has been said by our government and stuff like that. You know, I think we're all very disillusioned when it comes to that. And that's why we've lost, you know, devoted fans. Like, I mean, you saw videos of stadiums being full in the 1990s with Geylang getting crowds of like, you know, 20, like so many people. Like Geylang Stadium was, or Bedok Stadium was full. My goodness, I never thought I'd ever see that day until I saw those videos online, you know?
Yeah.
And we have to get that. We have to get that back. And like what Kel said, it's only through proper marketing. It's only through proper, you know, bringing out of the teams and stuff like that, that we can really do that. I mean, look at Lions 12. Lions 12 was an amazing initiative that brought Singapore fans together. We were able to fill out the Jalan Besar Stadium every single week for games against these Malaysian teams. And, you know, the next day going to a SPL game or a Singapore Premier League game, there was barely anybody there because there's no marketing being made. So I think there's so many improvements that need to be made. I think, you know, with all the promises that have been made so far, we've grown, I throw this word a lot, we've grown very disillusioned to everything. And I think there really needs to be a change in the words that are being told to us, you know, rather than being sold this whole dream of, you know, having Singapore football rise to the levels of where, you know, these other countries that we've been referencing go. I think there's so many things that can be done. There's really a lot of things.
Yeah, but do you think we'll ever see a day where the league, Jerome, do you think the league will expand? Where we go, you know, like the only way people, like you talk about the past and the Geylang United at Bedok Stadium, but also look at the likes of Woodlands Wellington, Sembawang Rangers, you know, in the heyday of the Premier League in Singapore, you had ferocious fans, ferocious support, and everybody could, you know, have their tribe in a way where there was a little, where I stay in Woodlands, Woodlands is my team and I'm going to go behind them. Do you eventually see the need for the league to grow where we can develop players?
Definitely. I think it has to start from the bottom now, because if we don't develop these players, then how are you going to funnel them into the various different clubs? Like, you know, I really think it has to start from the bottom. Like what?
Yeah.
I mean, I was speaking to Rafi Ali about it on the podcast that time, and he was saying, like, you know, last time with education-wise, or was it Farid Hamid? Oh, sorry. The Farid Hamid episode where, you know, Coach Kadir will actually, like, you know, bring the players together. They will have tuition together. It will be embedded in them when they were younger to move up in the football scene. And then you have Rafi Ali, who came out through the Milo program. I think that program really built up a lot of very decent players, you know, in that generation. And after when it closed down, that's what's been missing. I think something to draw people from the youth up into the various different levels of football, I think that has to be a very big option. I mean, rather than focusing on goal 2034, blah, 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 all this kind of thing, we have to look at building our young players again. I think that's a very big thing.
Yeah, completely agree with what you guys are saying, you know, and I think, Cal, to add on to what you mentioned early on, structure, that's what we're missing. So it's great, we have these 8 S-League teams right now, but what's below these 8 S-League teams and what's above them, right? So right now, with that announcement, we're looking at a 2034 goal. So between the S-League and 2034, there is really a giant vacuum. And if you look at the foundation of what we have below, who do we have locally, or which organizations or what programs do we have locally that are feeding younger players into the S-League? We have none, right? I've spoken to, you know, previously, you know, while working and interviewing many international sports administrators and organizers, and this particular chap was from the Real Madrid Foundation, which they're currently still in Singapore, and the Real Madrid Academy is they're behind that. And he was saying that the structure of sport we have in Singapore is very, very, very precarious, because it's shaped like an eye. We have a very small base and we want to reach this very high tower. So any tower that's built like that is going to collapse. Whereas if you look at any of the countries with a solid, you know, league, you look at Spain, right? They have a giant La Liga, and then they have teams below that, and then more teams. Same with the English Premier League, same with the Bundesliga. Yep. So at any point of time, you know, any pro-level sport, any athlete needs to be replaced. They can come from the second tier, and there's like, you know, an entire bunch of players who are just waiting to take over the next level, right?
That was the thing. I mean, you talk about what's happening below us, and what's happening below us is the NFL Division 1, Division 2. And honestly, 2 years ago, I was focusing more on the NFL divisions, which were you know, that's the thing. You don't see many players actually from these NFL Div 1, Div 2, island-wide leagues actually making it to the SPL. I mean, you have maybe two or three players who are exceptions to the fact, like Ander Zeppelin, who was actually playing at one of the NFL teams previously and then was brought into Geylang. You had Shawal Anwar, who went through that same phase, and another one who is right now escaping my train of thought. But, you know, there are not enough of these players who are being scouted who are, you know, capable of actually making it that step upwards. You always see them taking the step downwards, like SPL players going down to the NFL. You don't see many players going up, which I think is the absolute wrong way of doing things. Yeah. And, you know, some of these players are really good. I've gone for these games. They're very passionate. You know, the NFL ones and twos are generally the school of hard knocks, as they always say. You know, because for me, I have had the opportunity to go for these games 2 years ago. I would stand it, because there is no, my goodness, just thinking about this frustrates me so much. There is no FAS presence at these games at all. At all. And that's the thing. None of these people are seeing what is going on at these levels of football where players are going in wholeheartedly for tackles. You can hear coaches screaming at the players from the touchline. There's so much passion in the NFL 1 and NFL 2. But the governing body here does not care about what is going on there. There's no one there. I am frustrated by that. I just don't see anybody there, you know, helping out in terms of promoting these NFL teams, because some of these players are really good. And that's the thing. They're not being pushed and they're not being promoted. And that is frustrating.
Yeah. And even to go to your point, you know, we don't have to go that far to look at the league tier system. Malaysia has it. From what I know, you know, Malaysia has M1, M2, M3, M4. Four different tiers of football, right? At least they can develop players, and that's why they're kind of ahead of us in on the entire international stage. But I don't know. I don't know what's it going to take for Singapore to plan having like a tier system, or maybe have the tier system, but even leveraging on it, having like a division playoff promotion thing, get a bit more excitement, get the fans in, you know, like 2034, it's, yeah, fantastic. But I don't know. To me, it won't come through, and I'll be happy to eat my words and have humble pie if we don't sort the league out and have a tier system pushing youth from these different divisions, having promotion, getting fans back on board or not. It's just another, you know, another failure. Then you're going to do another one in 2050, whatever it is. People are going to have that same mindset. Oh, and another plan. Here we go. That kind of thing. You know, I just wish, I know, some millionaire, billionaire, whoever wants to invest in the league thinks about something like that. I don't know. I just wishful.
So further to that, right, and the point that Jerome made about in schools and, you know, how the kids, like, you know, Kadir Yaya and his generation, they used to do tuition together and they used to come up together. We have a base in schools, right? And what are we doing with it? Nothing, because it begins and ends there. So if we can start our bases in schools, where already we have support, and then, you know, show the parents, not just the student, you know, just make it very crystal clear that about, you know, if I play in school and I do well enough, okay, I get to play for what? Combined schools. Which competitions do we play in then? And then I get to play in the national under 16s, under, you know, whatever rank, you know. And from there, where do I go? I get to play in one of the maybe I get to join a club, you know, one of the youth teams or one of the clubs. And from the clubs, I get selected to play in a national team. In a national team, where do we play? What do we play? We play the SEA Games. We play the, you know, Malaysia Cup, whatever else. Yeah. And then from there, we can, you know, so there is a step-by-step way for kids to aspire to. And, you know, as long as they see that, as long as the parents can see that, there will be an existing structure, right? And then after that, the governing bodies, right, need to solidify this. And when they do this, then we'll have a proper path, right? And then we'll have what the other countries have. I mean, of course, it's always going to be different because we're smaller and because we are, you know, we have less people. But like you said before, Cal, Switzerland made it to the World Cup. Croatia has made it to the finals. There's no excuse for us being having a small population. So the structure is just what I'm missing, and someone to drive it, some driving force.
And do you remember when you were picked up for Milo and things like that? You really felt like the pride, like your friend is in a Milo, team and moving up. You don't hear or see that from your kids or your kids' friends these days. It just seems like, you know, the interest has completely died, which is strange. But yeah, sorry, Hatta, to your point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a big part of our concerns right now is about expanding the pool of talent, right? Because we can't have a bigger tier system, we can't have a bigger league if you don't have the players to do it. But I mean, to give the government some, you know, some slack, this plan does look like expanding it over the next 15 years. Now, it's just a matter of whether they could fulfill it and they could go through with it, because they claim scholarships, right? And scholarships means career opportunities, and that's one of the concerns for parents, right? So again, I think on paper, it looks great for the next generation. Now it's just a matter of being able to follow through with it. And also kind of have that entrepreneurial spirit as well, to be able to think on the fly and fine tune this as they go, because, you know, no plan is perfect from the start. And you've got to fine tune it. But one of the main concerns that a lot of people have of our government institutions, it's inability to kind of be flexible and think on the fly and have that kind of entrepreneurial spirit, which ironically started the Singapore journey in the 60s, right? So I mean, we're shooting this, we're kind of recording this on a Monday night. I know they promise bigger fleshed out details of the partnerships, blah, 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 on Tuesday tomorrow. But right now, it's just a matter of, okay, that's a good looking plan. Now let's see how serious you are in executing it and following through it, right? I think Jerome also mentioned, yeah, we have all these smaller leagues in Singapore, and we have talents like Anders who went unnoticed, and you're right. I think the government needs to take a much more closer look at, and they need to be much more closely involved at every level to ensure that this plan, whatever this plan is, comes to fruition. I really hope it does. I think it might be better off because I can imagine all Singaporeans kind of rolling their eyes at this goal 2034, because we've kind of been here and there have been many iterations of these kind of promises over all these years, right? Not just World Cup, but whatever it is. I would settle for being the best Southeast Asian team over the next 10 years. You know, for me, even the best, what, Thailand, Indonesia, even these guys are not making it to the latter stages of the World Cup qualifiers, right? So just to solidify our place in the best of Southeast Asia first, and just take that one step, is I think what I want to hear first, instead of competing with what, Japan, Australia, Korea, who are titans, yeah, and who have such long heritage and great government plans as well. I mean, they've got great sporting excellence and government execution at every level, right? So it's one thing to talk, but I think the government just have to follow through now, and got to hold them to those high standards now.
Now, speaking of Asian countries who've got an excellent track record of football, like the South Koreans and the Japanese, let's head over to our guys, to our friends at the La Liga office here in Singapore, who'll tell you a bit more of all the Asian players in the La Liga this season. So, take it away, guys.
Hello, everybody. It's Adrian Perol and Russell again, your weekly voices for all things La Liga. We are doing something a little different today. In extent of the different derbies you have listened in the past few weeks, we are diving into the Asian players that connect Spain and this part of the world.
As Adri mentioned, you know, the interest in La Liga is actually growing across Asia, and some of the continent's most high-profile talents are already making a lasting impression on Spanish football. The impact of our Asian players have also drawn brands and partners like M88 and Budweiser, who aim to engage with football fans in Asia. In this current season, the 2021 season, there are already 7 Asian players across Spain's top 2 tiers. And as you will discover, you know, they come from Japan, China and Korea. But, you know, especially so, we remain hopeful that we will see players from Southeast Asia and, as what we all hope, Singaporean plying their trade in La Liga soon.
Yeah, in fact, Russell, Singapore Premier League's Young Player of the Year 2020, Saiful Akbar, went on a trial at Club Deportivo Tenerife that was in the second division of La Liga about 3 years ago, more or less.
I remember that. And since you are throwing out facts, did you know that Takashi Inoue made EBA, one of the smallest clubs playing in the top European divisions, the third most followed club in Japan. So of the Asian players currently in La Liga, Inoue was actually the first to arrive in 2015. He actually introduced himself to the global stage on the 2018 World Cup. And even though he was 30 years old, the impression that he left on the world was nothing short of genuine excitement at his discovery. And his stock has risen ever since. He was Japan's creative spark and became the third Japanese player to score twice at a World Cup. So he said himself, you know, that his life has changed after this World Cup, with many Japanese now recognizing him or even pointing at him whenever he's on the train. But ask anyone who follows La Liga closely, and they will know Inoue from his successful spells at Eibar, Real Betis, Alaves, and then now back at Eibar as one of the coach's most trusted players. Along with the arrival of international teammate Yoshinori Muto, Eibar became the first club to have two Japanese players in the same squad in La Liga's history.
Well, Russell, speaking of history, Yoshinori Muto has written himself into history books as well, having scored in La Liga, Bundesliga, the Premier League and J-League. While still studying at the university, he signed his first professional contract with FC Tokyo, scoring 13 goals, matching the top debut record in the first division of J-League. By the end of the season, he was named as one of the J-League's best 11. His journey brought him to Germany, where he became the second Japanese player to score a hat-trick in the Bundesliga and contribute to a goal every one game and a half. He became the first ever Japanese player for Newcastle United before joining Eibar on loan this season. Even with the support of his fellow Japanese national Inoue, Muto still faced the challenge of the language barrier, an issue that was also raised formally by Rafa Benitez and Steve Bruce about the difficulty of getting their instructions across. Eibar manager José Luis Mendilibar highlighted this issue too, but fancies his ability to learn and understand what the team is asking of him, apart from scoring goals after Mutu's first goal in La Liga added to his tally across the different leagues.
And I think you mentioned a word that I am quite interested in finding out the Spanish term for it. So, quick Spanish lesson again, Adri. What is loan in Spanish?
Well, the word is a cesión. Una cesión.
Cesión.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, we talked about Muto, right? And unlike his international senior, I think one such player that has no language issues whatsoever, having spent much of his youth in Barcelona's La Masia Academy, is none other than the wonder kid, Takefusa Kubo. So Kubo mania broke the internet when he was announced to have joined up with Real Madrid. And though he was meant to be signed to their B team to develop, he impressed both his teammates and coaches alike before being sent out on loan to Mallorca last season. It's no wonder that back in Japan, everybody's crazy about him and they expect him to lead the national team for the next decade, being the best in his age group. So Kubo was fast-tracked from a young age, playing in the Under-20s World Cup at just 15 years old, being the youngest player ever to play in the J-League at 15, and became the youngest to score in a J-League game. He is also the second youngest player ever to represent the Samurai Blue at just 18 years old. So after dazzling for Mallorca in their relegation battle, the 19-year-old has been sent on loan again, firstly at Villarreal for the first half of the season, where he made his debut in the European competition and helped the Yellow Submarine progress through the group stages. And now, for the second half, he's actually at Getafe, where he has immediately impressed coach Jose Bordalas.
Yeah, for sure, Russell. Kubo is a very good player. And now I would like to talk about the Chinese star on La Liga, Goulet. Goulet transfer to Espanyol de Barcelona in January of 2019 was absolutely huge in this native China. Espanyol has become one of the most followed clubs in China. Did you know that his official presentation of Espanyol reaches 350 million people in China? Or Goulet's goal are watched 10 times more than the Leo Messi on social channels? These numbers are amazing. Goulet is known as China's Maradona. The reason of that is because he has scored 102 goals in the Chinese Super League. He was the second top scorer in that league's history. In addition, he is the youngest player ever in Chinese Pro League match and the second youngest player to score a goal in Chinese professional and a hat-trick in the top tier of Chinese football. Since he arrived to La Liga, I think that his most important moment was his 88-minute equalizer in a home derby against Barcelona at the start of the 2020. That goal earned Espanyol de Barcelona a 2-2 draw against the biggest rivals, FC Barcelona. And continue talking about different other Asian players, I would like to talk and this time for a player that is in playing in Huesca, Shinji Okazaki. Shinji Okazaki, to turn 35 years this year, the Japanese striker is a seasoned pro who has already enjoyed success in England and in Germany, and with his national team, of course. Before retiring, he wanted to play in Spain and this led him to join Huesca in the summer of 2019. In his first Spanish season, Okazaki used his experience to help Huesca to win La Liga Smart Bank, Spanish second tier, and promotion to the first division. Did you know that Okazaki 12 goals in one season was a record for a Japanese in Spanish football? Besides, he was the team top scorer this year. Now, the top active Japan national team goal scorer is in the top division of Spanish football to try to repeat his success with Leicester City, when he was the Asian International Player of the Year and he won the EPL. Can you imagine Russell Huesca winning La Liga this year or next year?
To be honest, you know, with how things are going with the team, I think it's difficult. But if anyone can do it, I think Okazaki can, right? So I think on that note, another quick Spanish lesson, Adri. What is success in Spanish?
Éxito. We say
éxito.
Success. Éxito, yes. It's very similar to exit in Spain, in English, sorry.
Then what is exit in Spanish?
Salida.
Ah, okay. This might be a bit confusing.
Yeah, false okay, friend, but... we call in.
let's try to remember that. And I think, you know, besides Japanese and the Chinese that you mentioned, I think we want to highlight a Korean, right? And look no further than Lee Kang-in for Korea's shining light, because he was the one that steered Korea into the final of the Under-20s World Cup, even picking up the Golden Ball Award given to the best player of the tournament. So Kang-in is somewhat a football celebrity, especially back in Korea, where he achieved national prominence after starring in a reality TV football show at just 6 years old, where he was dubbed Little Park Ji-sung and Football Prodigy. So imagine, you know, the kind of impact he has. And at just age 10, Valencia actually brought him to Spain. And fast forward many years and just 17, he was named in the official team of the Toulon tournament, despite being considerably younger than most of his opponents and teammates, which many attributed to his development in Spain. And since then, Koreans have been calling him Magne Hyung or Hyung. So if you understand the context, especially in terms of the kind of respect and seniority to this in Korea especially, you know, this demonstrates really just how highly the nation regards him. Because his under-20 teammates, who are all older than him, began to call him that even though he's the youngest in the squad, because of his skills, maturity and responsibility, making him seeming like the actual veteran in that sense. So he signed his professional contract with Valencia, which included an 80 million euros release clause, placing him as one of the most valuable young players in the world. He then made his first team debut at 17 years, 10 months, 24 days, breaking numerous club records and becoming Valencia's youngest foreign debutant and first Asian to play a league match for Valencia.
Yeah, very interesting, Russell. And last but not least, I would like to talk about another Japanese, another veteran in La Liga alongside Inui, is Gaku. Gaku has had the best experience in La Liga since he has played in 14 so far. Tenerife, Getafe, Deportivo de La Coruña, and currently in Leganés in second division. An important fact about Gaku is that his arrival to Spanish football was after a very good performance against Real Madrid in the final of the Clubs World Cup with Kashima Antlers. He scored 2 goals at that game. I remember to see that game and I was impressed with his performance. He remembered me to the cartoon of Oliver Atom when I was a child. Most of you will recognize it as Captain Tsubasa, but the name in Spain was different when I was a child. During this season in La Liga Smartbank in second division, he has played 24 games with one goal and two assists.
I think many people who follow La Liga would know Gaku, right?
True.
And I think that's pretty much all we have for today. So today was a bit different. We wanted to share a bit about the stories of these Asian players. And while we understand that, you know, we don't have the most number of players playing in Asian players in La Liga, but it remains the fact that all of them are top high profile talents and many consider them as, you know, history makers and the best of the best.
Sure, Russell. In addition, we hope, as we said at the beginning, we hope to have more Asian players in the future, and especially from Southeast Asia, and why not from here, from Singapore.
We'll stay tuned to that. But for all of you listeners, stay tuned to the next episode of the recording, and we will catch you again next week. Thank you and see you.
Thank you so much. See you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Adrian and Russell, for that. And all of us here will definitely look forward to the day when we do finally get to see a Singaporean footballer over in the La Liga. So let's round up our chat on local football here, guys. So it's March 2021. At least for the next 9 months or so, what would you guys like to see happening in local football? Let's go around the table with that. Cal?
Coverage. I mean, just more coverage on social media, YouTube, Facebook, whatever it is, just to get a bit more attention that, you know, the league is up and running. These are the goals, like put on the fantastic goals or great saves or something that, you know, just keep pushing and promoting the league. I think that's where it starts from in locally. And, you know, in the plans of FAS and what they're doing, hopefully their timelines, their KPIs, that we can also see that actually hits milestones this year. So, you know, for local football, that's all I can hope for.
And how about you, Hatta?
Yeah, same for me. I think it's just about raising the profile, right? Lion City Sailors did a good job in raising profile on some level. But I think with this announcement and you know, LCS and their big marketing push, there's no better time than now to kind of, you know, strike where the iron's hot, right? So I would love to watch these AFC matches where we want to be proud of, you know, our players and our teams, whether it's the Champions League or the slightly lower level AFC Cup. So, you know, if they could find ease of accessibility to watch these matches, whether it's through free live streaming for Singaporeans, and yeah, using the power of FAS and all the government bodies and whatever influencers you can get to be involved in this, just to raise the profile, I think us playing in the regional games are a big first step in driving that awareness. And I hope that we can, you know, if I had to do one thing, I hope to rally behind our teams in the regional competitions.
And what about you, Ewan?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm not right now at the state or the stage I'm in. I'm not going to go to a match and commit, you know, 2 hours to watch a football game, 90 minutes to watch a local football game. For various reasons, but I think the main one is I have no affinity with the league currently, right? But I think that one thing that all the teams can do, or the league itself can do, is to, when the matches are done, put the goals up, put the highlights up, because, you know, even with how big the Premier League is, the Bundesliga, whatever league it is, they've used this to hook on and get more people watching again. And I mean, I for one, I don't even have, you know, time right now to actually sit through any of the European League matches. It's just too long, right? And nowadays everything is, you know, really on demand. I want to see it now, and I want to see the important stuff, and that's it. So I mean, social media has given us this advantage, this boon, where I think the clubs, or at least the marketing guys in the clubs, can make use of whatever, you know, viral video, whatever fan video, whatever influencers they get, to get these highlights online. It doesn't even have to be like, you know, if there's a six goal thriller, it doesn't even have to be all six goals. It could be like, oh my gosh, did you see this fantastic goal by so and so? Yeah, in the 60th minute. It could be like a 6-second video, and it comes up on Instagram, it comes up on, you know, Insta stories or anything like that. And people will catch on, people will watch. I mean, case in point, people are even listening to us in this podcast. So a very big thank you to all of you who are. And, you know, it can be done, right? We just need to start with the smaller steps. And I think it'll grow. So I hope to see some social media presence for the local league this year.
So Jerome, what's it for you? What do you look forward to happening this year in local football? And I've got one other question for you. If our listeners are going to watch one game, just one game this weekend, what game would it be?
Okay, so I'm gonna start with what my wish is for local football. I know this is the whole, like, you know, when I'm on the final whistle, we ask this question every time to our guests at the end is, what is your wish for local football? I think my wish is to see more stories being put out there on local football. I think with other places, you know, videos, they're not meant, there's not much coverage on these local teams anymore. You know, we want to find out, like, for what Ewan mentioned about the highlights and everything else, like skills and everything else, all the top goals and everything else. I think stories of players, I think this is something that really needs to be brought out there. You know, like players like Emerick Ong, how he struggled through, you know, injury, how he's, you know, with family and stuff like that, not being with the club, and then now playing in the Singapore Premier League. You have Anders starting from the bottom, making his way up. I think more of these stories deserve to be told. And that is my main aim for this year, it should be the main aim for everybody, you know, to, like, if you have a story about a local player, you know, bring it out there, you know, it deserves to be told. And then, you know, the more people hear it, the more people will have that heart for that player. Like, you know, when I spoke to Emerick about about family and everything else, you know, you really feel for these players and then you really want to support them. And, you know, it will really drive you towards actually supporting these players and then actually going for the games and stuff like that. So that's my hope, lah, to see more stories like his being brought out there, lah, because I feel that will drive, like, the human interest in football fans to actually go and watch the games and stuff like that. For games this weekend, there is actually going to be a tough one. Okay, so of course, this weekend is going to be actually quite massive for Saturday because it's going to be Lion City Sailors versus Tampines Rovers. So that is going to be the big one this weekend. And that is definitely a game that needs to be watched because, you know, you see Lion City Sailors with all the players that they've gotten throughout the preseason. You have Tampines Rovers who unfortunately have not been able to strengthen as much as LCS have. So that is going to be something really to watch to see how Lion City create, especially with the under 23 ruling and the foreign quota ruling. So what that means is that basically four foreign players are able to be put into the starting lineup with three under 23 players. So that's seven spots gone. Then you have the goalkeeper, that's one more spot gone. So there's three spots remaining for the rest of the players. So I'm looking forward to see how Lion City Sailors actually, how they will line up, because that is going to be that foreign quota ruling plus with the under 23 ruling is going to be massive for them. I think that's my big game for the weekend.
And Jerome, where can we find you on the internet?
So for the SG Football Podcast is SG Football Podcast on Instagram, SG Football Podcast on YouTube, and on Facebook will be Unofficial S League Podcast. If anybody wants to follow my Instagram, I don't know why they would, but I rarely post on it. I usually post on the other one. So it's a Eurosnob Jerome, basically on there as well.
Jerome, here's something for you. Would you like to name our secret player for this week?
I'll go with Gabriel Quek.
Cool. Very good. Very nice.
Yep.
Gabriel Quek, that's our secret player for this week. So listen up, people. Before we sign off, Hatta, just to catch up on you, anything from Boot Hype locally based this week?
Yeah, so more training videos. This time we're also doing playtests with the Puma Future Z. I've won one over Sunday and I'm just going to be shooting on Tuesday with my training at ESP Zen. I'm waiting on Kyle to join me there. And Sporting Lisbon Academy on Thursday night as well. So I'm probably going to be compiling my play test highlights across those three sessions and probably do a summary of my first thoughts on the Puma Future Z. Yeah, so that's on the radar for now.
Cal, will that be happening anytime soon?
Yeah, I told him, right? Give me 2 weeks and I'll be there. Like, you know, I'll be there.
That was 1 week ago.
The Rembrandts. The Rembrandts. I'll be there for you, bro. I'll be there soon. Promise.
Okay.
My word is my bond.
I don't think you will be seeing Ewan on the pitch, though. Would we, Ewan?
No. I'll be in my armchair, my sofa, watching the action. And, you know, just because we didn't mention it, shout out to all the United fans. Great win. Thank you for making the league slightly more interesting. And commiserations to all Liverpool fans, including yourself, Hyrule, for that 6th home defeat in a row. I don't know how that's possible, but yeah.
One word.
Setting records both ways.
Yeah, records are definitely broken, man.
Bomo, bro. Bomo.
I also say. So with that, we've come to the end of our podcast for this week. I'm definitely going to be catching the Lion City Sailors versus Tampines Rovers game. That's on Saturday at 5:30 p.m. Let's hope that, you know, all of you will be catching it too and, you know, give our local football a shout out and some support as well. So with that, that's all for me. Hyrule, signing off. And bye to everyone. Bye, Cal.
Bye, guys. Support local.
Bye, Hatta.
Cheers, guys. See you soon.
Bye, Ewan.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
And bye, Jerome. Thanks so much for joining us this week.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Always enjoy talking to like-minded people on the game that we love so much, especially locally.
Catch you guys next week. Bye.